Got to get my my Aaron Sorkin mindset. Hold on.
That's the opposite of the gorilla mindset.
Yeah, it's the bonobo mindset.
Oh shit, I forgot my keys. Here is an important thing to know about dialogue. No one in the history of the universe has ever forgotten their keys. Get it out of here. I tell all my students this on day one. I'm Oscar-winning screenwriter and television craftsman Aaron Sorkin, and this is my masterclass. For me, I'm constantly in a state of writer's block. I'm blocked up right now. Dialogue is taking words that have come out of a character's mouth, holding them in your own mouth, tasting them, and then spitting them into a bucket. That bucket is your screenplay, and that's what writing dialogue is. Most people don't know this, but I got my start writing for the popular anime series Neon Genesis Evangelion.
He has healing ability that allows him to instantly regenerate a demolished heart. Then I'll have to destroy the brain. But I can't use my right arm.
I left after the 10th episode, and lots of fans were upset with the series finale. See that cork board behind me? In my masterclass, we're going to fill that board with your writing ideas that will be a new finale for the series. If you can write anime, then you can write an Oscar-winning screenplay like The Few, The Good, and The Men, or Moneyballs, The Lottery Story. Every writer who's ever worked for me, on day one, I give them a copy of Augustine's Confessions and the screenplay for Paddy Chayefsky's Network. And I say, read these, and if you can write something better, you can kill me. I'm still alive, so make of that what you will. If your anime screenplay doesn't work, it's because you've broken one of Sorkin's rules for writing anime. Rule number one, your main character must be a virginal sissy boy orphan who is a coward. Rule number two, if you don't have a character who is eating all the time, God help you, because I won't. Rule number three, your female lead should yell every other line of dialogue. I promise you there will be bad days. There will be days when you want to quit. I have those days all the time. I have days where I don't write a single thing. But to be a writer means that you have to help me fly. And let me tell you, when you see my name on screen, you will feel like you are flying right along with me. I'm Aaron Sorkin, and this is my masterclass. Aaron Sorkin's masterclass may not contain Aaron Sorkin or result in a screenwriting job. Photos of Mr. Sorkin or a facsimile of Mr. Sorkin are available to all students for an additional $300. If you cannot afford the Sorkin masterclass, then one of our loan specialists will work out a payment plan for you and your family. If you are currently involved in a lawsuit against the masterclass program, then you may not attend the Sorkin masterclass. There will be no food or water available in the masterclass, and you may not bring your own. Rights and restrictions may apply, void where prohibited.
It's not all the same to me, you punk. I've come here to take your IQ and your talent and put it to some patriotic fucking use. And where does it say that a good news show can't be popular?
Nielsen ratings.
We're going to do a good news show and make it popular at the same time.
That is impossible.
Between your brains, charm, looks and affability and my...
refusal to live in reality. It's impossible, man. Social scientists have concluded that the country is more polarized than at any time since the Civil War. The Civil War.
Okay, we are back. It's episode 34 of Chapo Trap House. I, of course, am Will Meneker. Joining me, Felix Biederman.
Hey, everybody.
And Matt Christman.
Hello, folks.
How are you guys doing? Matt, where are you coming to us from? Where are you broadcasting from in these great 50 states?
I am in beautiful, moneyed, classy Vail, Colorado. And due to a combination of my cardiovascular health and the altitude, I feel like I am going to die every moment.
What is Vail like in the summer?
It's nice. The roads are passable, which is good. I'm not feeling like I'm going to skid off of the road at any moment. We went through these mountain passes, and I was just imagining trying to do them in the winter, and it like made me fucking nauseous. But no, it's very nice, very green. And it's my first encounter with commercial marijuana culture, now that Colorado is sort of the centerpiece of legal weed in America. The first thing I saw practically when we crossed the border into Colorado was a shop called Kush Gardens.
Ooh.
With a K. And it made me think, you know what? Marijuana legalization was a mistake. If it's all going to be jokey bullshit pun names, then nope. I'd rather just buy it off a dude in a Walgreens parking lot. Thank you very much.
And but it's just, it's very clean, very rich in film.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's like a collection of like apartment complexes that are all very self-contained, and then these like mixed-use developments with a bunch of different shops. It's like gallerias and whatnot, yeah.
Did you buy any Kush at the Kush Gardens?
I did not buy any Kush at the Kush Gardens. Apparently, it's not necessary if you basically know anybody who lives here, because home grows are pretty much universal.
Is that also legal?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's like organic, you know, no need to...
It's totally, just, yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah, you can have that store-bought shit. I want farm to table. I want closet to table.
Closet to bowl marijuana.
Yeah, closet to bowl weed. Thank you very much. It's good stuff, too, I gotta say.
Quick note. Before we get into today's slate of stories, I did get some negative feedback from from a listener on this week's subscription show. Got angry because I cut off Felix before he could expand more thoroughly on his Mormonism is like Halo analogy. So, Felix, would you like to expand any further on that?
All right. Well, you know, Will was doing what the host of the show should do, which is cut off one of the co-hosts when he's about to get racist. Which, you know, like, you can't analogize Halo Combat Evolved to Mormonism without getting racist. I'm sorry, it's just impossible. But
where we left off, you said Master Chief was like Joseph Smith.
Yes.
And the forerunners were
Jews.
Israelites.
Yeah. And now, look, I'm not saying this is what I believe, but I'm saying this is what the Mormons believe, the Mormons who secretly made Halo as a means to sell their religion to people. Mormons say that black people carry the mark of Cain, that is analogous to the flood, whereas with Latinos...
The Lamanites,
yeah. Whereas with Latinos, they don't, but they think some of them are bad, so they're like the Covenant, and they're like, if you guys remember the elites, Commander Lord Hood... You know, you remember from UNSC in Halo? That's Mitt Romney. And Donald Trump is like the king of the brutes. They represent the brutes in the Covenant.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. They're terrified of him. They're like, he's terrible.
Now, the Mormons believe that the Garden of Eden was somewhere in Missouri. That's basically like the original Halo ring world, right?
To Mormons, you have to collect pieces of Eden, like in Halo. And once they like get them all together, they can create a super weapon that can kill minorities. I don't think that's good. That's just what Mormons believe. That is just what Mormons believe, okay?
I have to take your guys' words for all of this because I don't game. I have sex with women.
Ooh. I don't normally game, but Halo is the only game I ever really played because it was that good, folks. We want to get more into video game news with Chapo. It's been mostly untouched. We've referenced Metal Gear Solid. I think we're going to start Twitch streaming sometime soon.
But we're going to bring real ethics to games journalism, y'all.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. Happening. Hell yeah.
No, we're taking after our boy Robbie Suave, who said he likes to get video game news from different sources and from a variety of sources.
That's what freedom looks like, everybody.
And we are one of those. I think we want to become one of those sources. Chapo Trap House is officially Gamergate now. Oh, before we get started, I forgot about this. I suppose in Chapo Press Clips, we should mention that we have our own Wikipedia page now. Someone did that for us.
Yeah.
We are now on Wikipedia. It's a fairly good summary of the other coverage we've got and the things we've said about ourselves and the show. But as I said when this first came out, it's not really a Wikipedia page, in my opinion, until there is a tab entitled Controversy or Criticism. So I think we should work. That's our next step. That's our next one.
Whoever's writing that thing, it's not like there isn't material. There are about 5 dozen paste bins and Medium articles by anxiety communists who've broken down all of the evidence that we are CIA plants.
Please look up the Reverend D. Cherry Coke on Medium and Twitter to fill out that tab. He's got some good stuff. Some excellent stuff. But actually, even more important to me than Wikipedia is that someone found that we're actually on 4chan now, too. Did you guys see that?
We're elite as hell, y'all. We're fucking elite.
Yeah, no, 4chan loves us. And they love our memes. They love our Ross Douthat memes. They love, you know, everything we do, basically. And so now Chapo Trap House is now Gamergate and alt-right.
Yep. Just imagine 3 Pepes here talking about the news.
I love it. We have a subreddit, too. So, like, I just, you know, let's keep it coming. Let's keep it growing. Speaking of such, let's get into the news this week. And I want to start off with a story that we absolutely made happen. I mean, it's, like, not even funny because we said, Matt, you said exactly this as a joke on our subscription show this week when we were talking about...
I did indeed.
How Steve Bannon has... of Breitbart has now taken over, is now at the helm of the Donald Trump presidential campaign. And you said something to the effect of, it won't be long until Ricky Vaughn or, like, Himmler Pepe 1488 also is brought into the fold.
Right, yeah.
And
it's the natural trajectory, and it turns out that was correct.
Literally a day after we recorded, what comes over the wires on McClatchy, but a Trump advisor accused of making anti-Semitic remarks.
Wah, wah.
But it's not just that he's accused of making anti-Semitic remarks. He's accused of denying the Holocaust happened wholesale. There are shades of Holocaust denial. And what he said is the ovens were technically too small to dispose of 6 million people.
I mean, he's just making an observation.
Now, the guy in question's name is, he's former Department of Defense Inspector General Joseph Schmitz. And basically, he's getting taken into the back room and saying, you can leave with the hammer, or you can leave with the Trump campaign. Make your choice. But I just want to read briefly from the McClatchy article by Marissa Taylor and William Douglas. It says, allegations of anti-Semitism have surfaced against one of Donald Trump's foreign policy advisors, raising further questions about the guidance of the Republican presidential nominee is receiving. Joseph Schmitz, which, let's be honest, sounds like an anti-Semitic name already.
Yeah.
Joseph Schmitz was named as one of 5 advisors by the Trump campaign in March and is accused of bragging when he was a Defense Department inspector general a decade ago that he pushed out Jewish employees. It said, Schmitz, who is a lawyer in private practice in Washington, says the allegations against him are all lies. Like another series of lies.
Makes you think. Yeah. Hopefully... speaking out against these lies won't be a crime in Germany.
Going on, it says Daniel Meyer. For some reason, in this article, that name is in 3 parentheses. I don't know.
Yo, what's going on here?
McClatchy, is that a house style? It says Daniel Meyer, a senior official with the intelligence community, describes Schmitz's remarks in his complaint file. His summary of his 10 years achievement reported as, "I fired the Jews," wrote Meyer.
Are we sure this guy didn't work for Nixon's State Department?
Again, this is exactly like our Ice Watergate bit from our live show in Philly.
Yo, I got all them fucking Jews out of there. I got all them out of there. They're fucking gone, bitch.
So, in his formal complaint, Meyer said Crane also said Schmitz played down the extent of the Holocaust. Quote, in his final days, he allegedly lectured Mr. Crane on the details of concentration camps and how the ovens were too small to kill 6 million Jews. Schmitz said that Crane was the source of other false accusations against him. These allegations are completely false and defamatory, Schmitz said in an interview Tuesday. This is where it gets really funny. I'm quoting from Schmitz in the article now. I do not recall ever hearing of any allegations of anti-Semitism against me, which would be preposterously false and defamatory because, among other reasons, I am quite proud of the Jewish heritage of my wife of 38 years, he wrote in an email. Later, in a phone interview, he said his wife was not a practicing Jew, but, quote, ethnically Jewish because her maternal grandmother was a Jew.
Look, I have her entire family tree going back to Europe. I've got the skull shapes of all of her ancestors, okay? How could I possibly be anti-Semitic?
I just want to state for the record here. According to Joseph Schmitz, his wife is, quote, ethnically Jewish because her maternal grandmother was Jewish. That feel when you apply the Nuremberg laws to your own wife, and she passes with flying colors. Yeah, I mean, that is fucking amazing. Nothing anti-Semitic there. He's just, my wife is a Jew, but not in any actual sense. And just her bloodline is part Jewish. And I've
when the time of cleansing comes, I'll be able to make an agreement with my area Obergruppenführer.
If it was
good
enough
for her being sent away.
If it was good enough for the Führer, then it's good enough for me and my family, goddammit. It goes on in the article about how this is a sort of a problem for Trump because he has said things himself. Said Trump himself was accused of being anti-Semitic when he told the Republican Jewish coalition in December, "I'm a negotiator, like you folks."
Nailed it.
Oh, and Felix, this one is for you. It said, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, has publicly defended him, saying that as a Jew and the grandson of a Holocaust survivor, he'd never found Trump to be anti-Semitic. Perfect segue into our next story, which we're checking in now on a friend of the show, Milo Yabadabaduopoulos, who made the news this week because apparently... He, a while back, he decided to start a charity that would be a scholarship for underprivileged white people. And
men, thank you very much.
Underprivileged white men, yeah, to go to college. It's a college scholarship. It's like the United Milo
Honkies, college fund, something like that.
And apparently he raised about $100,000 and deposited it directly into his bank account. And there has been
ballin', yo. Respect.
Success win.
Now, when this story broke, my initial reaction to it is Milo is trying very hard to make me like him.
Well, I mean, his contempt for his fan base was evident any moment you saw him interact with those fucking losers. So it just makes sense that he would then take the next step. When he sees these people and they literally... like prostrate themselves before him. In fact, if you've seen the footage of him from UCSB, where six incel dinguses wearing "Great Make America Great Again" hats carried him into an auditorium on a sedan chair, how would you not think I could grift all of these morons for anything? I could tell them that I'm a wallet inspector, and they would all give them to me, and I'd never have to give them back.
It's sort of like taking money from bad people. It is, as we said, it's a mitzvah. It's sort of like Milo is the human version of Bitcoin.
I just wish somebody else got the money other than him. It's just one of a huge number of examples of right-wing credulity in the face of grifters. I mean, survival seeds and gold money and reverse mortgages and Bitcoin and Yabba Dabba Dopolis stealing money from you for a fake charity. And I think it comes down, the reason these guys are so fucking dullardly gullible when it comes to this, even if they're like teen idiots in their basement like Milo's fans, or, you know, the fat survivalists who buy gold coins that are vastly marked up. What it is that to be a conservative in America is to feel besieged by the culture, right? Like, at all times, everything is going against you. When you turn on a TV, when you turn on the radio, it's all nothing but hip-hop and Beyonce and globalism just shoved in your face. And it creates this bunker mentality, this sense of being under siege with your fellow freedom fighters, basically. And that creates this psychological sense of solidarity with anybody else who you see is on your team. And that creates like an implicit trust that you wouldn't necessarily have for any random person who told you to buy gold or survival seeds or contribute to a college scholarship fund with no kind of, you know, transparency to it.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And did you guys read Sam Chris's very funny story in Vice last week about going to see Milo?
It was anti-free speech. So, no, yeah.
Part of it, though, was it's these pasty British kids wearing Make America Great Again hats in London. Like, what the fuck does that have to do with anything? That's like if our incel Nazis walked around with UKIP election ribbons pinned to their shirts.
Dude, what is more cuck than that? Wearing a Great American, making America Great Again shirt, yeah, you when you're British?
To kick your ass.
That's so cuck.
You want them to be free and not your own country.
So cuck.
They should be wearing buttons and hats to commemorate the War of 1812, where they actually did kick
off. Something.
They should be wearing t-shirts of the White House getting burned to the ground in 1812. But then again, that would be problematic because during, for them at least, because during the War of 1812, British soldiers freed slaves as they ran through the South.
Yeah, that's a problem. So
problematic for them. But what I loved about Sam's piece, and we should link to it because it was very funny, is... Sam was very insightful and funny as always, and the underlying point that he makes is that Milo is just an unbelievably boring human being, and like there's really nothing interesting about him per se. And he's like, he's sort of like, he has contempt for his fans, obviously. And at one point in Milo's speech that Sam saw, he's like, says something like, "You can never have my looks or my wardrobe or my fabulousness, but what I can give you is like my passion," or something like something ridiculous like that. But like, he is a debate team pedant just like them. He's always saying like, they insult me because they can't argue logic and facts with me, which is what exactly happened to Sam when he wrote this article, is that like so many people got mad because he's like, he's not even defending free speech, he's just going to insult them ad hominem, this is biased journalism. And it's just like, well, it's not really, I mean, Sam's writing an opinion piece for Vice, basically. Like, he's paid there to go and give his opinion about what he saw. And what's also so funny is that they're all proudly anti-PC. They love being offensive, and they hate, you know, being called out for being supposedly quote-unquote racist or sexist. But Sam commented that they looked weird or sad or something.
Nice hand on him.
And they immediately took offense to it.
Wow. They immediately took offense. All you can do is resort to the ad hominem, isn't it? You just proved my point, mate. Or you got to ad hominem. You don't have any real argument against me. So check in, mate, brother.
Or did I say you did? No true Scotsman, you ruddy cunt.
But I think it should go without saying that none of these people genuinely believe in free speech as such. They just want credit for their speech. They want accolades and sort of like acceptance from polite society.
They
for their
want
speech.
People to stop averting their eyes and pretending to be getting a phone call whenever they start talking to them.
Yeah, but as an addendum to the Milo fake charity story, which again, he's collected about $100,000, but hasn't dispersed any of the money or set up any kind of nonprofit status. It's just went straight into his bank account.
He's going to buy a boat called the SSSS.
One person who actually donated money to the Milo Yabba Dabba Duopolis privilege grant, who's not mad at all about this supposed quote-unquote hoax, is sort of spiritual godfather of Chapo Trap House, Guerrilla Mindset founder Mike Cernovich.
The greatest philosopher of our time. Mike Cernovich changed all of our lives. Like, Will quit his job because he read Guerrilla Mindset.
Yeah, hell yeah. It was like that changed my life.
Yeah, Mike was like, "Do you think that a modern day ape would work in publishing?" And Will was like, "Hell no, that shit's gay."
That's why he lives in. That's why he lives in Prospect Park and scavenges for expired fruit from garbage cans.
Yeah,
I was living a chimp lifestyle at best. Mike, you helped me lead a gorilla lifestyle that I'm on now, silverback ape status. But yeah, no, Michael shared a receipt, and he says, "As an actual donor to the privilege grant, let me address the media's latest hoax against Milo Yiannopoulos." And he shared a screenshot of a receipt that says, "Dear Michael Cernovich, this is a receipt for your gracious donation. Organization, Milo Gives Back. Amount, $2,500.
Jesus.
Oh, my God.
I could grift Cernovich so good.
Cernovich gave...
Any one of us could just get this guy's entire... we could turn his alimony into an annuity and just give it and turn it into a lump sum and have him give it to us in a weekend.
So Mike Cernovich is Alpha Gorilla is not mad about this at all. In fact, he's mad at the media for creating this fake controversy, as they do. He writes, Milo started a scholarship fund as his public profile was rising. I was one of the first donors. The story today is a hoax. He continues.
How is it a hoax?
Mike is going
to
tell you.
He hasn't distributed any money to any scholarship people.
Well, Matt, he's going to tell you. He says, using his newfound fame for good, Milo started a scholarship fund. However, his profile went up 10 times from the day he started it. When your star rises the way Milo has, you realize that finding honest, competent people who can manage your affairs is almost impossible, which is why he has 40 interns writing everything he says online. But that's hard to come by. It's hard to come by 40 people who will do that kind of work for you for free. Milo told me, an actual donor, that he was falling behind and that the scholarships would be delayed. He told that to Cernovich personally, but he didn't tell it to... he told that to the people who donated more than $2,000. Continuing, the hoaxing media, of course, did not ask me, an actual donor. Amazing that they didn't call up Cernovich for a quote. What was going on? They instead lied about Milo. The media is gonna media. Milo works far harder than most realize. I didn't realize until visiting him in Alaska. He works even harder than I do. Long story short, anyone hinting that Milo took money is lying. I say this as a donor. The hoaxing media wants to discredit him. The hoaxing media wants to discredit him. The end. So, Cernovich acknowledges that not a dime of the money has been used for a charitable purpose, but he just knows that Milo is working too hard and he's falling behind like we all do.
Yeah, sometimes when you collect money for your charity because of stress, stress is part of like becoming a gorilla, you accidentally embezzle all of it. It's happened before. The Clinton Foundation, right?
Another perfect example.
Does great work. Like, they, I don't know really what they do. I think they like go into third world countries and try to give kids autism. I'm not really sure. But like, hey, look, sometimes a Saudi gives you $20 million and you don't really know what happened to it because we're all trying to do our best out there, okay?
Nobody in the media has alleged that Milo has spent a dime of this money. It's that 100 grand is just in his bank account. I doubt he's spent any of it on, clothes,
Botox injections,
rims, or activist
collagen,
collagen injections, plastic surgery. Liposuction,
shoulder pads.
Shoulder pads.
Milo has not spent a dime of that money. The scholarship's been delayed a year. All of the underprivileged white men who wanted to go to college this year, just wait a year until you can get some of that scholarship.
Yeah, take a year off. Okay, look, in solidarity with our intellectual brethren, Milo, I'm going to come out and admit something. Okay, so you guys, you subscribers, you pay for the premium episodes. This is hard to admit, but sometimes that's not actually us on the premium episode. That's our... We found some guys that kind of sound like us, and we throw them like $20 each to do a show as us. Because some days we don't have it in us for another premium show. Like... Will has to make those Menaker mindset videos. Matt is like on a road trip. I'm jacking off. Like none of us, we can't do it. We can't give you like two like 3 hours a week. So like, yeah, sometimes it's not us. And is that fraud? Yeah, technically. But like, we're just trying to do our best, man.
Will gives so much of a day. And Will has to walk his dog, like, at least twice a day. And sometimes Will is replaced on the show by me, Brendan, the producer. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I
shouldn't have said that. Will, what the fuck, man?
Sometimes Brendan does my work for me.
Yeah.
Because we sort of sound and look alike. So I make Brendan do the show for me, in addition to editing the show. Will is actually he's in his sensory deprivation tank right now, preparing for the next show he's going to do, which is probably sometime around October.
So sorry guys.
Sorry, everybody, but
This is really Will now.
You know, we haven't been the most forthcoming, but it happens whenever you're involved in like a enterprise that makes more than like $200 a year. You're gonna like do some fraud. Sorry. Sorry.
Fraud is in the eye of the beholder.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Who holds the money that is supposedly been defrauded, you know? So, again, don't believe what you read about Milo Yabba-Dabba-Duopolis. It's media gonna media, folks. And the cuck media is gonna try to cuck Milo, but he is uncuckable. And thanks again to Cernovich for changing my life.
Absolutely, yeah, me too. Before the gorilla mindset, I used to have like slumped over posture. I was begging women for sex and not getting it. Now, like since I've been doing his breathing exercises, I have an upright posture. You know, when I sit down, my hips are at a right angle with my back. Women are constantly begging me for sex. I'm turning them down. I can stop my heart at will due to gorilla breathing exercises. So if I'm ever in a mass shooting, I can fake my own death and the killer can walk over my body and I get up and I strangle him from behind and I'm on the news as a hero. And more women go up to demand sex from me. I turn them all down and it increases my power level to the point where the retained energy from not coming, I will be able to actually block bullets with my chi energy and lead a new generation of indigo children. So yeah, just like, thank you, Mike.
Thanks to Mike and Milo.
You try to pay me off with a banana, but JD is blacker than a city called Atlanta. Give me some elbow room, I need some elbow room, so I can boom shakalaka boom. That's the sound of the 20 gauge, lock us up and the licks mark can break out of any cage. You never even hear of this, I'm taking care of this, licks mob environmental terrorists. Fuck Great Ape and Magilla, I'm a killer, Magilla Gorilla, ain't a killer. White boys like Godzilla, but my super nigga named King Kong played his ass like ping pong. The motherfuckers get your ding dong. Or the bullsack, what's that dick and nutsack? Get your butts back from the black fist. Cap pillars, the gorillas in the mist.
Ooh, running for my magic.
Moving on, I want to talk about this story I came across. This is not like sort of election or internet-related goss, but this is an article I came across in Bloomberg Business Week this week. And on a serious note, I thought this was like one of the better articles I've come across lately. It was genuinely chilling depiction of the kind of dystopia that we are all soon to be living in, or rather that many of us are currently living in. But this is like a depiction of where we're all headed as a country. This was like I said, in Bloomberg Business Week, by Shannon Petty Peace and David Varekos from this week. And the headline is Walmart's out of control crime problem is driving police crazy. I just want to start here. The opening paragraph, it reads, Daryl Ross, Officer Walmart to his colleagues in the Tulsa Police Department, operates for up to 10 hours a day out of the security office of a Walmart supercenter. It's a small windowless space with 6 flat screen monitors mounted on a pale blue cinder block wall. And on this hot summer day, the room is packed. 4 Walmart employees watch the monitors, which toggle among the dozens of cameras covering the store and parking lot, while doing paperwork and snacking on Cheese Whiz and club crackers. In a corner of the room, an off-duty sheriff's officer hired by Walmart makes small talk with the employees. It describes how as soon as he walks in the door, he's presented with this kid, an 18-year-old, who was detained trying to leave the store with a microwave oven. His mom is there and he's upset that he thinks her son won't be able to join the military now with a criminal record. But since it's his first offense, they let him off. It goes on that almost immediately after that, they bring in a woman who is, quote, middle-aged with big sunken eyes and pale cheeks, her hair tied in a messy bun. Employees caught her using phony gift cards. She rattles off a series of excuses. She pretends to throw up in a trash can until they smell pot on her and find a handbag full of marijuana roaches, a small scale, and a pill bottle full of baggies. A computer check reveals 5 outstanding warrants for her arrest. Continuing, it says, it is not unusual for the department to send a van to transport all the criminals Ross arrests at this Walmart. The call log on the store stretches 126 pages, documenting more than 5,000 trips over the past 5 years. Last year, police were called to the store and other three Tulsa Walmarts just under 2,000 times. By comparison, they were called to the city's four Target stores about 300 times. Most of the calls to the Northeast Supercenter were for shoplifting, but there's no shortage of more serious crimes, including 5 armed robberies so far this year, a murder suspect who killed himself with a gunshot to the head in the parking lot, and in 2014, a group of men who got into the parking lot shootout that killed one and seriously injured 2 others. So, keep this in mind. This is a Tulsa City police officer who is spending his entire shift not patrolling the streets, but just sitting in a Walmart waiting for the, like, this huge amount of crime that takes place in these Walmarts. And basically what it describes is, you know, we can now basically add providing adequate security to the list of health insurance, building maintenance, living wages, and, like, hours that don't crush a human being's will to live to the things that Walmart actually doesn't provide because profit. Did you guys check out or read this story at all?
I don't read stories take place in lesser stores. I don't get that out of here. I don't care about those people. They're trash.
That shit's landlocked.
Yeah, it's low grade, D grade landlocked. No fly honeys. No one is wearing custom suits. But none of those people smoke. No, thank you.
Actually, well, I mean, it is kind of weird to me that in communities where basically nobody has anything, there's a giant building that has literally everything, and there are 6 employees in it that people might decide to try to get some shit out of it.
Yeah, Matt, listen to this. This was astonishing to me. It says, the company has one worker for every 524 square feet of retail space. And this is a result of something in 2000, it said former CEO Lee Scott took over and implemented an aggressive cost-cutting crusade that led many stores to deteriorate. The famed greeters were removed, taking away a deterrent threat at the poorest entrances and exits. Self-checkout scanners replaced many cashiers, and they added stores faster than they could hire employees.
Thanks, Obamacare.
So it's basically like, if you've been to these Walmart supercenters, they're in desolate parts of the countries, and they're creating more desolation by, you know, cutting out actually what used to be sort of Main Street smaller stores, or sort of what, I don't know, city planners and people who study this call the sort of eyeballs on the street effect, that they're like the breakdown of, like, people actually being on the street and walking around at any hour of the day in kind of a shopping or commercial district cuts down on crime, because essentially there are more people and there are more witnesses. Walmart takes care of all of that by just creating these sort of massive, flat kind of parking lots. Walmart is also open 24 hours a day, and they let people spend the night in their cars in the parking lot, many of whom are actually their employees as well. So I don't know. I read this article and I found it absolutely chilling, because it's just, like, I don't know, a profound portrait of, like, late capitalism to me, that we're just kind of creating these, like, desolate crime and shopping zones where, like, there's, like, low prices and low humanity. But, like I said, this is where we're all eventually going to be living.
Yeah.
It's just
kind
of in a Walmart superstore, and, like, different aisles will be controlled by, like, different gangs or just sort of roving tribes of people. The dairy aisle is controlled by, you know, the people who are painted, and then, like, housewares will be, like, the cannibals or something like that.
There won't be any shoplifting, though, because there will be laser gun robots at all the entrances.
No, that would be
just turn you into fucking chum as soon as you step across the line with an item you haven't paid for. No, they'll be cheap by then. It's like VCRs or DVD players. Cost will drop.
So because you can't technically shoplift from the store, everyone will just be living in the store, just sort of feeding off of it and never leaving the superstore. Again, J.G. Ballard, do better. I mean, Walmart, do better. Okay, yeah, no, we're going to link to that piece. I think it was really well done, and I think everyone should read the whole thing, as they say.
Don't read the comments, though.
Don't read those comments.
Yeah, am I right? Fire. Dumpster fire. Too many Walmart bros.
Moving along, from an article you should read to one you definitely should not read, because I'm going to read it to you now. It is this week's edition of the Chapo Reading Series, and I think I've got a doozy for you. You guys ready for this?
Yeah.
The title of this article is "Men Are Getting Weaker Because We're Not Raising Men." This is by none other than our good friend David French.
Hell yes.
Of the National Review.
Hell,
we're checking
out,
yes. My boy.
Hell yes.
My boy. The subhead here is "Young American Males Are Losing Touch with a Critical Element of True Masculinity."
So true. So true.
Now, before I get started, some context for this. This is in response to that sort of clickbaity article that you may or may not have seen this week, based on some probably spurious study about how millennial grip strength, or millennial male grip strength, is weaker than previous generations.
I'm sorry, whoever wrote that thing has not seen me jerk off.
Yeah.
Or they have not met one Felix Biederman who could defeat any of his ancestors in physical combat.
All my ancestors were fucking pussies, all of them. Bitch, I would have destroyed the Cossacks. I've seen pictures of the Cossacks. They're not that big. They're not that big.
You would have gotten wrist control all over.
Yeah, here's my ancestors. They don't know how to get wrist control. They don't know how to establish distance. They kind of deserve to die or like be persecuted.
They did not know the 21-foot rule.
They had no idea about the 21-foot rule, or else they would have like used bladed weapons to destroy the Cossacks. The guerrilla mindset, absolutely not. My ancestors had none of that. They were cucks. They let the Cossacks destroy them, and they came to America where they were also cucks. And I just come from a long line of cucks, but I have broken the line. So
you've broken the chain. Yeah. You're establishing a new strong bloodline.
Exactly.
But, of course, you know, when I saw this story about how millennial male grip strength is weaker, of course, I immediately knew that someone, I was thinking maybe Rod Dreher, someone was going to come through for us for this reading series about it. And my boy, D. French, fucking absolutely did. So
hell yeah.
To him. Again, to quote the great Charles Portis, we're weaker than our fathers, Dupree. We don't even look like them. And that's what this article is about. Now, again, maybe just to refresh your memory, David French is the guy that wasn't even man enough to run a vanity presidential campaign against Donald Trump.
He is no Evan McMullen, that's
yeah,
for sure.
Evan McMullen is so, Evan McMullen has killed so many more people than David French, by the way. David French is, he's a JAG officer. Like, he's internal affairs. He's a bitch.
Officer.
Yeah, he is. He's a fucking bitch. But Evan McMullen, like, was really doing dirt.
We've already established this about David French. His voice sounds exactly like Spike Jones. Maybe we'll replay that audio sample of the two of them talking.
We protect our own. We don't blame the victim. If you come after our own citizens on our own land to try to defeat free speech, to try to destroy fundamental constitutional values, this is what will happen to you.
Wait, hold on a minute. I want to go over this plane one more time.
You're scared, right?
Maybe.
It's uncanny. He looks sort of like James Cromwell, but unwell.
Mm-hmm.
Or Felix, I think you described him as a sloth going through chemotherapy.
Yes, yeah, that is my opinion of David French's appearance.
Yeah, like Chris Elliott with chronic wasting disease.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, so keep that in mind, because David French is, if you're a millennial male, David French is about to lecture you on masculinity. Here we go, folks. If you're the average millennial male, your dad is stronger than you are. In fact, you may not be stronger than the average millennial female. You're exactly the kind of person who in generations past had your milk money confiscated every day, who got swirlied in the middle school bathroom. The very idea of manual labor is alien to you. And even if you were asked to, say, help build a back porch, the task would exhaust you to the point of uselessness. Welcome to the new post-masculine reality.
Hold on. I want to put a marker in here right now, if that's okay. These all seem oddly specific.
Yes.
Who
yes.
do you think David is describing?
Keep that in mind. Okay. He's setting up, like, this is the structure. He's setting it up. Millennial male, you're weak. I'm stronger than you. You probably got bullied in middle school, and you probably can't build a porch.
But wait a minute. Bullied by who?
Stronger
than... Presumably
men?
The people who beat you up were also millennials, unless they got held back a whole bunch of times.
Yeah, they were Gen X. They were stupid Gen X kids.
Who kicked the shit out of these guys.
No, he said if you're a millennial that grew up when I grew up, if you weren't a millennial... If you just sort of took yourself and transported you a couple generations ago, you would have been getting your milk money stolen and swirled in in Robert E. Lee middle school bathroom in Richmond, Virginia, circa 1970. No, that's too specific.
Yeah.
Okay.
David French went to Nathan Bedford Forest High School.
Nathan Bedford Forest High School.
Yeah.
Continuing. This morning, the Washington Post highlighted a study showing that the grip strength of a sample of college men had declined significantly between 1985 and 2016. Indeed, the grip strength of the sample college men had declined so much from 117 pounds of force to 98 that it now matched older millennial women. In other words, the average college male had no more strength than a 30-year-old mom. Well, that's because moms are strong, it's the hardest job of all, support all mothers. He continues, yes, I know it's only one study. Yes, I know that
starting off strong.
Yes, I know that grip strength is but one measure of overall physical fitness. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That he's acknowledged. He has to have these little.
Yes, I know. There's no point to me writing this.
Yes, I'm a huge idiot.
No, but like all combat, it's like chess. You have to anticipate the line of attack that will come at you, and if you're a smart writer, you will acknowledge them, if only to make your final thesis even more strong. Even you can grip that thesis like a fucking vice.
It's true.
But it said, but as the Post noted, these findings are consistent with other studies showing kids are less fit today. Simply put, we're getting soft, and no cohort is getting softer faster than college men. So like I said, like these sort of dubious studies, I don't know what they actually mean, but this is like catnip for someone like David French, who is terrified of that society is losing its martial vigor and masculinity because for some reason. It's not personal to him specifically, but let's just continue. I look back to my own childhood. In 1985, I was 16 years old, and I was a nerd's nerd. I toted graph paper and 20-sided die to school to play Dungeons & Dragons at lunch. I like to think I was the finest dungeon master in Scott County, Kentucky. When I wasn't playing D&D, my nose was buried in Lord of the Rings or the Shannara books by Terry Brooks.
Oh, wow, look at that. Another
what a shock.
Confirmed.
Or the Dragon Riders of Pern by Anne McCaffrey.
You read the Silmarillion, you should be kept in a fucking
hole.
I played sports, sure. But let's just say that my varsity tennis exploits didn't make the cheerleaders' hearts flutter.
Holy shit.
This is, I want to make note of one thing. He said he brought his dice to school to play Dungeons and Dragons at lunch. I don't think you can play Dungeons and Dragons during a school lunch. I don't know. I could be wrong about this. I think you could play magic cards at school lunch, but Dungeons and Dragons is like a really involved process.
There is a lot of tools. There's a lot of shit you have to bring along for Dungeons and Dragons. You know, another reason why Cthulhu is a better game, but, you know, just saying.
Okay. French, he says, but none of my nerdiness relieved me of the responsibility of learning how to be a man, a protector, builder, and fixer. So that meant spending my Saturdays hauling out the ramps to change the oil and oil filters on all our cars. That meant helping my dad build a new back porch or constantly wrestling with immense piles of firewood. In parentheses, we heated our home with a wood stove. I made extra money working in the neighborhood yards. Being a guy meant doing manual labor. That was just part of growing up, no matter your social class. Okay, a couple things of note about this paragraph here. He says, despite the fact that I was an unbearable nerd, as I described in the previous paragraph, I'm going to give you my masculine bona fides in this one. He describes changing the oil on his car every weekend, every Saturday. That's too often.
Yeah, that's insane.
You don't need to change oil on a car every week. Number two, changing your car's oil may get your hands dirty, but it doesn't exactly build upper body strength. When I think of peak performance in the male body, I don't think of the guys who work at Jiffy Lube. Number three. Then he just describes doing chores, like yard work.
Why is he assuming that no one is doing that now? I mean, how does he...
Immigration, Mexicans are doing it, making our kids cucks.
But that's what the thing is, that David French is a cuck. So he
he's a total cuck. David French is a massive cuck.
So he can't be going on the, oh, Mexican slavery labor has made us weak.
He says, this is what he describes as manual labor. And like, the closest thing he actually describes is moving firewood from one part of the yard to the other. You're not going down the mines, David. And again, this is something I think every kid probably still does, if they're not too busy playing video games. So he goes, in the age of instant oil change, why entrust your car's health to a 16-year-old's ubiquitous lawn services and on-demand handymen? Privileged kids simply don't have the same naturally occurring opportunities to learn to work with their hands and develop physical strength. In the age of zero tolerance disciplinary policies, when any physical confrontation is treated like a human rights violation, they have less opportunity to develop toughness.
I want to see David French get in a fight with all the confidence born of knowing that he built physical fitness from changing the oil and moving a piece of wood.
And raking
leaves. He's going to get shredded.
Mowing lawns as well.
I pushed a self-moving lawnmower for 30 minutes every 3 weeks during the summer. I'm fucking jacked.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Today's young males don't have the common touchstones for what it's like to grow up and be a man.
True.
So, do you think David French was bullied at all in high school? I mean, I think maybe he was bullied, but that was the crucible that forged him into, like, the steel.
Alpha male, yeah. He is today. Absolutely.
Yeah. To be the full-time bathroom correspondent for the National Review. Continuing. That's not to say that they don't carve out their own distinctively male spaces. Boys and girls are different, after all. But spend time with teen boys today, as David French, I'm sure, does.
Oh, boy. He's really testing that grip strength firsthand.
And they can't escape. Your fucking hands are weak as hell.
Oh, boys, I need you to wrestle with me. It's for a column I'm writing.
And you'll find that their common experience revolves around Call of Duty than around work or even sports.
If David French wasn't a terrible writer, he would say it revolves more around Call of Duty than when duty actually calls. But he's stupid as shit, so he didn't do that.
I love this sentence. The male gaming experience is supplemented with... The male gaming experience is supplemented with copious amounts of porn.
Hell yeah, it is.
I like my gaming experience is male and my porn copious.
Hell yeah.
I just love this because David knows this because he's spending time researching all these things with teenage boys.
He bought presents and even gave him money. But payments were expected in return.
This sounds like he's grooming them. You know, like they'll often be
hey kids,
porn.
Who wants to come over to my house and help me learn more about the ways of teen boys? I've got porn and video games.
Jimmy knew he shouldn't be interested, but well, he was curious. What Jimmy didn't know was that Ralph was sick, a sickness that was not visible like smallpox, but no less dangerous and contagious. A sickness of the mind.
It does, and it continues. It says, raising a boy to be a young man used to be a natural act. Common experiences and rites of passage meant that my D&D friends could pop the hood of a car and get to
rites
work.
Like he's a Spartan child left to fight a wolf with the one like bare hands and a shard of fucking glass. Give me a fucking
yeah, he's, this is like when Raylan Givens is like, you know, I saw people get put down before I ever went to Quantico.
He says, sorry, the rites of passage that my D&D friends could just as easily pop the hood of a car and get to work right alongside the future mechanics of my high school class. Sure, we weren't as good or as knowledgeable, but we held our own.
Yes, we were cucks.
But here's the most importantly, There were no social justice warriors shrieking that there was no such thing as distinctively male or masculine pursuits. Again, this is made up. This is in your head. Not, like, in today's high schools, nobody is saying shit like this. Or if they are, it's, like, inconsequential.
Yeah, no, those are the cool kids in high school now are the ones who are like, why are cars for boys?
Okay, now, here we get to the crowning paragraph. This is my favorite, because this is where he betrays more than I'm sure he intends to. Now, for parents of the privileged, raising a boy to be a young man has to be an intentional act. You have to ignore the voices who are telling you to indulge your child's inclinations, no matter what they are, and train them to be not just morally courageous, but also physically strong. They can have their Xbox or their PC. My son brags about his kill-death ratio on Battlefield, and we belong to the same World of Warcraft guild.
Holy God.
But they can also hit the weight room. They can also not just learn to shoot, but how to assemble and disassemble their weapons. Even if you're rich, you can make your kid do the hard work that keeps any household together. So, his fucking kid is a pussy gamer as well.
Yeah, he failed.
He's not even denying it. He's a he has a fucking
like father, like son.
He wrote
this entire column while watching his son play Call of Duty in the dark.
He's
just
enabling,
like, through slitted eyes.
This whole thing is about how parents today have to fight against the cultural tide to raise a weak fail son. But he's just admitting in this paragraph that that's exactly what he
does. Yeah, because David...
It's just an expression of his personal anxieties that are then, like, weaponized onto other people.
He says, my son is, quote, proud of his kill-death ratio on Battlefield. He's a fucking loser.
Yeah, he's a huge loser. But it's all but like father, like son, because what was David but a huge, like, loser, incel gamer bitch who, like, worked on a car once? Like, that's his entire thing.
But again, this is like in the previous paragraph that his examples of the tough, manly shit he did as a kid were changing the oil in a car, something that requires no physical strength or stamina, doing yard work, something, again, anyone but can do, and, like, moving wood.
In
this paragraph, he describes, like, the things that... he is instilling in his son to be, quote, physically strong. And all he says is he's supplementing his gaming by, quote, he could also hit the weight room and then learn to disassemble a gun. He's not even saying he's going hunting with his son, which would be, like, at least stereotypically masculine. This is just playing with toys in their suburban McMansion. None of this shit is manly at all.
No, yeah, the Frenches are a family of cucks. it's like my family line, except David nor his son will break the. Maybe his son will, because I was a gamer at his son's age. You know, there's still time for him to become alpha, to read the guerrilla mindset. Like, in fact, I think we should do something similar to the Marshall Plan and hire those AKP skywriters, except to skywrite every word of guerrilla mindset outside of David French's house, so his son can read it and become alpha.
His son actually is on the way to becoming alpha, because he says, though this may sound simplistic, never underestimate the positive effect that raw physical strength can have on a young man's development.
What?
Cue the Curb Your Enthusiasm music. I'm just gonna, like, we'll just move past that sentence. Don't even think about it. I've seen the impact that weight training has on my son, and I wish I'd been as diligent when I was his age.
My son is thick, solid, and tight. I can't wait to see how thick and massive my son becomes. My strong,
boy, Tiberius, low-key thick, yo.
Yo, my son thick AF.
I've experienced the impact, even as an older adult, of the physical transformation of army training.
Oh, what? So, oh, wait a minute. So this is the guy who
joined the JAG Corps.
He did a month and a half of boot camp, and then he sat behind a desk for the rest of his career. Holy shit.
Like, he did some cardio, and he's like...
He's Arnold in Commando, obviously.
You remember in the opening credits of Commando, Arnold is actually carrying like a downed
tree trunk. Yeah,
that's David Fringe. It's firewood. It's kindling.
It's kindling. Basically, American or Western masculinity has been in one long sort of crisis moment ever since the Industrial Revolution. And this is just another sad exemplar of that.
Okay, final paragraph, guys. Our culture strips its young men of their created purpose and then wonders why they struggle. It wonders why men, who are built to be distinctive from women, flail in modern schools and workplaces designed from the ground up for the feminine experience. Men were meant to be strong, yet we excuse and enable their weakness. It's but one marker of cultural decay, to be sure, but it's a telling marker indeed. There is no virtue in physical decline. So what David French is saying is that there's way too many twinks and not enough bears today.
Yeah, no, it's true. He's right.
What about otters? Sort of like the in-between?
I think it's sort of implied that he's training his son to be a gamer otter hybrid. David of Finland.
There is no virtue.
When I was a boy, I would go down to the steel mill or the Navy Yard, and men were bursting out of their leather vests and choker collars.
Older men need to guide softer, weaker boys into becoming fit, strong, and virtuous.
David French commands his readers to make their sons thick.
David French, low-key thick. Yeah.
David French should, you know what David French should do? David French should watch Bigger by the Day. He should watch Rich Piana videos. He would fucking love them.
Yo, Rich, slap that Xbox controller out of your son's weak, girly hands and sit him down in front of a computer to watch every single episode of Bigger by the Day.
Yeah. All right. So, it's motherfucking shake time. But before we get to our shake, we're going to see if any sickos are in the motherfucking bathroom. Let's do it.
Is it too obvious to wonder why these people are so obsessed with, like, the sort of emasculation of America? Like, I can imagine Ben Shapiro talking about this as well. He's like, boys today are weak and girly.
Well, look, I mean, an immature person might make fun of these people because their entire belief system revolves around fast food sandwiches, bathrooms, and young men not being swole enough. That's what an immature person would do, would make fun of these people for that.
I was actually listening to a little of the Ben Shapiro show this week, and by a little I mean 7 seconds before I started reaching for a bottle of pills and a razor. But I think I figured out what Ben is. Ben is Pinocchio, and Andrew Breitbart was Geppetto. And essentially what Ben Shapiro is an animated marionette, but without the actual soul of a boy. He's just been gifted this kind of weird half-life, and he does radio shows where he's like, Andrew would be thick about Donald Trump and his racism. Multiculturalism is a poison. There's no place for Trump in the conservative movement.
Really? Are you just holding your nose? Yeah, because that's like it's a perfect impression of Ben Shapiro. Yeah, but he keeps telling lies. Like, he's really happy that Andrew is dead because he can keep lying about him and saying,
let me explain to you who Steve Bannon is and why I know Steve Bannon. So I've known Steve Bannon longer than I was actually at Breitbart, and Steve knows me longer than he was at Breitbart, actually. So Steve Bannon turned Breitbart News into Trump's personal Pravda. To understand what this means, understand, I was friends with Andrew Breitbart since the time I was 17 years old. I worked very, very closely with Andrew Breitbart on a number of different projects for many, many years before he hired me in 2012. We were very friendly. We used to IM and speak all the time. He's been over my parents' house for dinner. I mean, Andrew and I, we're good friends.
Andrew would have fucking loved the Trump campaign. It's like everything that he ever stood for. We've talked about this, but yeah.
Record for the largest line ever fucking snorted.
Dude, he would be running the fucking Trump campaign. He would be Trump's press secretary throughout this entire campaign.
But if Trump would get zooted and scream in the faces of
stop raping protesters. People.
Yeah.
He would yell that at Bill Clinton.
And Andrew would be like, I mean, he'd be right, but Andrew would be. Andrew would be at like the protest in Chicago and like accusing all the BLM people of gang rape. Like, this is what he did. Like, he would have loved this. But if Andrew was still alive, you know, which would mean that Ben would be supporting the Trump campaign now, because he'd be like, I thought about it, and I think conservatism needs a facelift.
I just had the idea that I wish Andrew was alive so he could follow Bill Clinton, Jeffrey Epstein, and Alan Dershowitz around and just yell, stop raping people!
That would rule. That would be so cool. That would be fucking awesome.
For legal disclaimer, allegedly.
Conjecture. That's not a wouldn't it be funny. He would have done that.
He absolutely would have done it.
And it would fucking roll.
That would be awesome, dude. That would be awesome.
So, that about does it. What do you say we close out this week with a little mailbag?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Let's talk to the Chapo heads.
Let's talk to the Chap heads. Quick note. I checked the mail, and a listener was asking if we wanted to be interviewed for the Northwestern College newspaper, but that was from like 2 weeks ago because I haven't checked.
We're sorry.
If you still want us to do it, we'd love to do it.
But
just programming note, if you want to get in touch with us about something sort of immediate, the best way to do that is just reach us out to us on Twitter. DMs are open. Feet are ready. That's the easiest way to contact us immediately. But if you want something like a letter to be read on the show, definitely send it to chapotraphouse@gmail.com. So let's go through the mailbag here. Cameron Bogue writes that I really enjoyed the first episode of Frost Chrisman. It incorporated thoughtful analysis while being genuinely entertaining, meaning you guys are well ahead of the curve for movie podcasts. I was thinking about other movies that would be good for the podcast, and these came to mind. All of the John Sayles filmography. He recommends also Red Scorpion, the Jack Abramoff produced action flick with, I think, Dolph Lundgren was in that. That's actually
he was.
Yep.
Well, we could do a fantastic show on 80s sort of, Reagan era violence festivals. There's a lot of really good ones.
The last one that Cameron recommends a double feature of The Assignment and the Olivier Assayas Carlos series.
That's a very good movie.
Assayas Carlos was fantastic. That whole series was amazing. And actually, Matt, let me ask you, what are some films that are next up on the Frost Chrisman slate?
Well, we're trying not to plan too far ahead because we want to keep it limber, and we want to maintain sort of the current events model too, so that like things are reflecting what's going on in the world, so we want to keep it flexible. But I think our next episode, which I hope to record with Amber in New York next week, will be us basically going through, because it's a new podcast, we're introducing ourselves and our aesthetics to a new audience. We're going to kind of go through each other's list of like favorite movies, least favorite movies, you know, cult hits that we personally like that maybe other people aren't so aware of, and sort of bounce those off each other and sort of introduce our viewpoints to the audience on that.
It'll sort of like hip the audience to like your guys' taste.
Yeah, let you know what we're laying down.
Now, I have to say, I finally got down to listening to the first episode. I'd been behind on all my casts, but I had also partly been putting off listening to Frost Chrisman out of jealousy. But I did listen to it, and it was excellent.
Oh, thank you.
If you haven't listened to Frost Chrisman yet, the first episode was really good, about the sort of 70s paranoia thrillers. And you talked about a movie that I had never seen, and I really want to now, called Winter's Kill?
Winter Kills.
Jeff
Bridges, Sterling Hayden, Anthony
and John
Perkins,
Houston, right?
John Huston basically playing Noah Cross. It's based on a Richard Condon novel. It's basically...
And is this, like, insane Kennedy assassination?
It's every Kennedy assassination conspiracy kind of put in a blender as a way of sort of encapsulating and exemplifying sort of the psychic landscape that happens if you ever try to, like, get your head around the Kennedy assassination shit. It's really good.
Yeah, no, I really want to check that out. Maybe a little too soon, but we are actually in the works. We have a couple other sort of like satellite podcasts that we may be launching soon on the Chapo Network. But if you haven't done so already, definitely check out Frost Christman. Next letter. This comes from Michael. He says, "Hello, Trap House. I work at a small town news website in North Carolina. Part of my job is uploading our mayor's weekly updates for our website, and recently he said he had been getting emails complaining about the Gulen movement in a local charter school. When I read that, I wondered if I was actually losing my mind. Thanks. Listening to your show gets me through the day at work. Let me know if you ever need someone to talk about North Carolina politics." That is hilarious, but we're getting, this is breaking news, the Gulen movement has infiltrated North Carolina. Chapo Mailbag, this comes from Norbit Totinos. Norbit Totinos writes, "Greetings, my fellow Volcel warriors. Quick question here. If you nut in a dream, do you lose any psychic energy IRL? Felix, maybe you can answer.
I can feel this one. I can feel this one. As someone who just pissed in a dream, you really shouldn't get down on yourself if you have a wet dream. According to psychology and science, wet dreams are the ghosts of our ancestors trying to extract cum from us to create children into being, to create a new corpse that ghost spirits can inhabit. And there's really like not a lot you can do about that unless you take your alpha brain, live your life with a gorilla posture, and wear cooling underwear. Those are three steps you can take against wet dreams. But it's up to you if you count that, if you, you know, count that as like a coming relapse. But I don't think you have anything to apologize. Just wear your cooling underwear next time. Oh. And you won't come.
You know what just occurred to me? We opened this episode with Felix talking about bedwetting. So that's if Felix harms animals, he will have filled the dark triad, the second of which is Metal Gear Solid and gaming.
I really can't. I don't even know when the last time I like pissed my bed is. Like, what does it have to be? Like, fucking, like 20 years ago.
If any of Amber's cats go missing, then we have a problem.
Yeah. I'm turning into a dark child.
We need to talk about Felix. Next, this is not a question. This is more of a comment. Comes from Rhombus Quarter Taint. Just writes.
That is one of my made up teacot names, I believe.
So this is an OG fan. This is a real fan right here. The Rhombus Quarter Taint writes, "Learn tonight that Eli Lake is addicted to vaping." I actually also knew that.
A lot going on here.
I knew that because, like, way back, I remember I saw episodes of Blogging, like, when Eli Lake was on Blogging Heads, and because I'm a masochist, sometimes I watch them, and, like, he surreptitiously vapes when he's, like, on cam, when he's camming. When he's camming,
he's a cam boy.
He's talking to Ann Althaus or Robert Wright, and he's vaping and jacking off. He's camming. That's what Blogging Heads is. Right. Check it out.
Blogging Heads is, yeah, a really cool site if you guys don't know about it. It's a cam boy website, and it's where two journalists will cam with each other and argue about the issues of the day and then edge until they both come.
Yeah, they wonk each other off, basically.
Yeah.
Aaron Kleinman writes, this is definitely in fitting with what we've been talking about. Aaron Kleinman writes, "Hey guys, just wanted to know if taking off your shirt while you shit is part of gorilla mindset. Thanks for letting me know."
Yeah, yeah. Yes, take off all your clothes anytime you go to the bathroom. Yeah. Get naked when you wash your hands.
Yeah, did cavemen, they were nude when they shit. And like, yeah. That's,
I'd like to say that is the ideal, but I often fall short.
It's okay. You can always do better.
It's okay. You know, everything is a work in progress.
Yeah, hell yeah.
There was a longer email that was registering complaint that in everything of all the people we've talked about and made fun of, we have so far left Thomas Friedman untouched. That's true.
He is
eminently mockable, but I just haven't checked in with him lately. He hasn't really been on my radar. He had that
really good article a while ago, though, about the web people versus the wall people.
Oh, that was amazing. Maybe we should check
him out. He's had some good stuff. It's just you're living your life right if you're ignoring him. That's for sure.
He's also technically my father-in-law. Long story.
And last in the mailbag, David Mackey writes, the Bobby Jindal exorcism story. That girl was trying to fuck him, right? Dave. Dave, that is a good one. We should definitely bring up the Bobby Jindal exorcism story at more length in a future show. For those of you who don't know, Bobby Jindal was a biology major at Brown University that also participated in an exorcism. And oh, yeah. I think the exorcism is, there's a good chance that he probably saw a girl come in front of him.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he's been basically living with that knowledge for the rest of his life.
Yeah, Satan said, like, your mother sucks cocks in hell. And he went, golly. Oh, shucks, Mr. Satan. That sure is rude.
I was sort of semi-familiar with the Bobby Jindal exorcism story, but there's probably more there. I will do more research.
Having seen him speak in person at the Club for Growth Koch brother thing that I went to last year, I have a hard time believing that he could tell the devil to do anything. He's a font of anti-charisma.
He could tell the devil to do something, Matt, but it would be a much too vulgar display of power. Okay, guys. Till next week.
Yeah.
Keep it gorilla. Keep it gorilla mindset, everybody.
Peace.
Bye.
Bye.
Let's get down to business to defeat the Huns. Did they send me daughters when I asked for sons? The saddest bunch I ever met, but you can bet before we're through, Mister, I'll make a man out of you. Tranquil as a forest, but on fire within. Once you find your center, you're sure to win. You're a spineless, pale, pathetic lot, and you haven't got a clue. Somehow I'll make a man out of you.
I'm never gonna catch my breath.
Say goodbye to those who knew me.
Boy, was I a fool and tool for cutting gems.